Okay, good.
I remember in July when, like, it was actually...
When it was so hot was, that we couldn't control it. Because at this point, we could just open a window and bounce. Window, but, yeah. At this point...
Not happening.
It was right after that storm. You remember that storm?
Ooh. Yes, yes. The storm that actually knocked out my power, because that was a fun adventure night, to the point where we traveled over to St. Louis Park to buy beer because there was such a dividing line between where the power was out and where it's still on.
But if you go to one of the liquor stores where the power's out, you can get it for free.
Well, you can't get in the door for some so, yeah. And then thereafter we came back and we played fun games by flashlight.
Oh, yeah. Yep, we played the game with the three rounds and the writing of things on pieces of paper.
God, yeah, whatever that's called. I never remember what it's called, but it's like, it's almost a combination of,
telephone and dictionary.
Oh, telephone and,
there's a charades.
Charades, that's the other one.
Charades aspect
charades,
to it.
Where you have to, where you just, you get to describe as much as you want to try to determine which one it is, then you have to go down to, what, two words, and then it's just a gesture, or is it one word? Two words, one word.
You can describe it verbally. And then the next round is acting it out. And then the last round is one word. You can say one word.
See, I played it both ways where it's just decreasing in the amount of description just down to acting. And then I've kind of done the down and back up again.
Yeah. Yep. I think the last two rounds of what I mentioned can
be
switched.
For this
yeah.
game, it's where...
Oh, I thought you were talking about that paper thing where you have the draw picture or... Describe it.
No. It's basically everyone writes down a person, a place, and a thing, or just kind of variable of three things, and just fold everything up and throw in a hat. And then it's timed 1 minute at a time based on each team. You pull out a slip, and then you, for the first round, until all the paper is gone, you can say as much as you want to try to describe it without actually saying it. So until your team guesses, and you get points per piece of paper that comes out. The second time.
Play that and film it?
Filming it wouldn't really work since we don't have... Well, actually, if we have... How many iPhones do we have?
One.
One, two, three... Do we have four? Does anyone else have... No? Okay. Sometime we'll, if we have four, then
not
we
today.
Can do the... No.
I'd be more interested in playing Space Team.
True. Because, I mean, I have that control a bunch of different... but everyone else would have to buy the app, so I don't know how well that would work. Never mind.
Question for you, Dan.
What's up?
Unrelated. As a purveyor of fine spirits and brews and things, does it ever bother you that they always print one pint on the 16-ounce cans? Or that when you get, like, a 16-ounce thing of beer... So people call it a pint.
Imperial pint. They're
imperial pint.
Yeah, it's actually kind of
because it's not a pint. It's like significantly. It's like a sip less.
Yeah, it's like what 2 ounces less than an actual pint, but it's an imperial pint, which is just us saying the inch is better in another realm.
Okay.
Because I've actually seen that on bottles too, where it'll be a 12-ounce bottle and say slightly less than a pint.
Yeah,
like,
see that?
Well, yeah, that's even further from the pint than before.
It's kind of like when there was that big scandal when we were in middle school that you'd get those Schroeder milk cartons and they were filling, you know, it would say like however many ounces and they'd fill them slightly less to save money because when they filled like 10,000 of them, they skimped a little bit on each one. They could save a ton of money by saving milk.
Those bastards.
And someone from our school, I don't remember who it was, someone from MMW, like, measured it as a project.
Let's get
something.
On the mics.
What?
Let's get on the mics, because...
Oh, yeah.
We'll stroke up on this.
But they measured it as some sort of project.
Even closer.
Determined that it was slightly less...
No, yeah, grab on by the triangle.
Right.
Triangle down here. A little further down. One more. There you go.
The triangle, yes.
It keeps traveling.
They determined that it was slightly less. Each one was slightly less than was actually
than advertised.
And they, like, I don't know
if they somebody like sued the company. I don't think there was a lawsuit, but they
still gave them hell.
Yeah, and they changed it because it was, you know, they were breaking
inaccurate,
the law.
I mean, yeah.
They were
false advertising
their clients.
Son of a bitch. But I didn't really
drink
Imperial
milk. Pint. That's a fair answer.
Mm-hmm. It's us always trying to do our own thing, and because I remember, did I send that unit of measurement video to you? No, we watched it here.
Yeah.
Was the one where the perfect ounce or perfect something, the
perfect kilogram.
Perfect kilogram. And all of that madness.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, because if you get Guinness or some other beers, they'll actually give you a proper pint. Like the Guinness glass is a metric pint.
Right.
Or I think Guinness cans are actually a metric pint because it's, I don't know, because they're snobs about it, yeah. Which they should be. I feel,
you
know.
Even closer here, just help you out for a second.
Oh, right, right.
He was actually pointing kind of.
Oh,
jaunty.
I see.
There we go.
Well, and because sometimes if you go into a bar and they're advertising pints, if you ask for it in a proper pint glass, they'll give you, you know, like the Guinness glass.
Right. And you actually, for some of them, depending on the beer, I know that one beer that's sold at my restaurant, we offer the 20-ounce pour. It actually says on there in parentheses next to the price. And I know, let's see, McCoy's over in St. Louis Park actually advertises the ounce amount for each beer because they do a couple in the pint glass. They have the larger, more like, I don't want to, they call it a gripper. It's like 23 ounces, and they have the tulip as well. And that's, you know, significantly smaller.
I should do that with engagement rings or something. It's like, 1-carat diamond ring and make it a 95-point diamond ring or something. The measurement is like, this isn't a carat diamond ring. It's like, yes, it is. It's an imperial carat, sir.
Yeah, as long as you say imperial carat, because otherwise, and you have to trademark that at the same time.
Ellie would not have liked that.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're getting more for less density.
Wrap your head around that one.
Because I was going to say, unless you make sure to really highlight the fact that it's the imperial carat. It's like, ah, that's
just a
big lawsuit.
You could just call it the imperial
lawsuit.
1-carat diamond engagement ring.
And it's for the people just trying to save that extra buck.
Well, because you don't notice the difference.
Sounds fancy.
But if you go under 1-carat, there's a huge price drop. Because when you hit that 1-carat, we call it a magic number. It's like everyone wants to get at that 1-carat point.
Yeah.
There are different numbers like that. That if you go from a 99 point to a 1, the price spikes, or like, our cost for the stones spikes way up because the demand is much higher. So this could be a legitimate way to cheat people out of lots of money.
If you do 1.1, does it drop back down in terms of spot from?
No, because there you're over.
Okay, so once you hit that threshold, then
right.
It's... Because I wasn't sure if it's just like price increment of like 0.99 is X amount, and then the jump to 1 is like so many times more, but the leap from 1.1 or that to 1.1 is ever so slightly less. You kind of go up, and then you kind of slope it out a little bit.
No, it just jumps up and then keeps going up from there. But that's why we'll try to get stones right under a carat or under a carat and a half or under certain numbers to, you know, get the... And I'll tell people that. I'll be like, you know, you can get the same similar stone that's, you know, 1 point smaller in weight that's not actually a carat but costs $700 less or something, you know?
Shit. That's a jump.
The imperial carrot. I'm going to use that. I'm going to.
Yeah.
That's good.
It just sounds fancy.
It does.
Exactly.
It sounds good.
It sounds like you pulled it out of a crown and you're putting it in a ring.
Free imperial pint with every imperial carrot purchase. Well,
why not?
Not
well, guys, guys buying diamonds like that, they would need a drink after.
Yeah, exactly. It's
all guys need a drink after that.
Partner up with Surly. We'll do a fully local thing, because I'm pretty sure those things are 16-ounce cans.
There you go.
The Surly Diamond Brew.
Ooh.
Surly Black Diamond. Yeah, Surly Black Diamond Porter.
Ooh. There we go. <definitely
get that. laughs> Welcome to Tennessee, ladies and gentlemen.
So, I am curious, because I've never actually looked at rings before. What
don't have any bling?
What would be...
What?
like what's the cost of like a good 1-carat diamond versus the cost of...
Yeah, let's get a quote here.
Yeah.
We're going to buy some bling that we are going... Like, we're going to jazz out a microphone.
Yeah.
Premium well-cut diamonds, like, of a something that doesn't have any major inclusions or visible yellow color that's cut well and comes from a good stone cutter. For a 1-carat stone range, you might start looking at the regular appraised retail around, you know, you probably would be starting at about $6,000 and up at the lower end.
I like how that started out with a lot of red tape, like contextual, well, which I understand that that's how it all really plays
otherwise,
into it.
Otherwise, I'd screw myself really quickly because it's easy to make, you know.
Well, and every rock is different anyway, so each one will have to be appraised separately in order to get that accurate range
well, for instance,
of some sort.
Costco, you know, sells diamonds that look similar but are cut not well.
See, and that was one of the asterisks that I wanted to ask about is like if somebody was like really hung over the day that they were cutting a couple of these stones.
Nothing says love like Costco. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they'll be hung over when they're shopping there at the same time. But like if a diamond cutter comes in and he just hasn't had his coffee yet and he goes through a couple diamonds and then thereafter like he kind of perks up, he has a 5-hour energy and then he starts cutting some more, there will be that much of a drastic price between, you know, afternoon diamonds versus morning diamonds based on his actions? Cause, or is it reputation alone that leans heavily on this price range?
The way that diamonds are dissimulated into the market, almost all the rough in the world goes through a company called De Beers.
Okay, yeah, I know that name.
Acts like
somewhere.
A central diamond bank. They only buy from reputable, conflict-free mines. And every 3 or 4 years, they hold an event in London where they're based. They take their rough and they put them into sealed boxes called lots, and they invite a few of the world's best stone cutters to come into their offices, and they have these boxes out, and the box will have a price tag and a carat weight. They don't get to look in the box. They don't get to see what they're buying.
So it's they'll storage like, wars of the diamond world.
Yeah, they'll nice. be like you've got 3,000 carats of rough in this box, and however many, you know, fucking billions of dollars. I don't know. So they get an offer and they take it or leave it, and they pretty much always take the offer. Then the cutter goes back and goes through this lot of way more rough than they'd ever could cut, and they just pick the pieces that they want to cut. So the pieces that are going to give them the best opportunities to cut, you know, large stones of a good quality, cut to the ideal proportions of the shape of a diamond that you want. And after they pick the pieces out that they want, they go and resell the rest of it to other diamond cutters, and then those diamond cutters do the same thing. Then they pick the pieces they want and then go resell it again, and it gets sold again and again. And so
are they allowed to like do things to the diamonds to make them more interesting to their lesser, to make this almost like transition from Storage Wars and to flip this house
there
just to see
are,
how many reality shows
that.
We can actually
and,
get into this concept?
There are lots of reasons why it's a bad idea to do that, but if you
oh,
if
yeah
you, if you do that it's brings the value of the stone way down.
Yeah, it'll limit opportunities thereafter if you do anything to the diamond other than
sometimes they'll
is.
Take lasers and try to shoot out imperfections by drilling little holes into
yeah.
them, but then it makes the diamond weak. If you try to set it, you can crack it. It makes it kind of you're bluffing your way through.
Like, right. Which I imagine people still, you know, fuck around with this.
We got one in. It was like an almost 2-carat stone, and it looked really, really clear. Like when the guy came in and gave it to me, I was really impressed. I was like, holy shit, I've never seen a diamond like this before. And when my dad looked at it, he showed me that it was one of these stones where they had shot into it, and there were little holes in it where they had taken out some of the inclusions, and it's why it looks so good. And we had to give this guy like a page of disclaimers before we'd work on the stone, saying, "You understand if you know
if it cracks, it's
right.
not on us."
And you understand that this diamond has been treated and all this stuff that you know. But so what you get sometimes is you get stones that have the same clarity and color and weight ratings. That are not equal because the closer a stone is cut to the ideal proportions of that shape, the better the brilliance is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way that people get fooled sometimes, like buying stones online in Blue Nile or places like Costco. The cut is where a lot of times people just don't pay attention to it because it's the one of the variables that just isn't, you know, talked about as much. But
on Halloween, do you like spray them with fake blood and say that they're blood diamonds?
That would be pretty funny.
Like you just kind of or even just go to Costco and get some of the fake stuff and just like have it on display. Here's our collection of blood diamonds, and just pour some like grenadine on top of it for a second and a half. Or just like a blood diamond fountain where it's just grenadine cycling through this thing and they're all kind of tinted red.
Did you guys hear about the woman in Eden Prairie that went missing, that was murdered by her boyfriend or whatever?
Yeah. No.
They found her body recently.
Oh, yes, I heard.
The cops came in on Halloween with the jewelry that they had taken off her body because they found her the day before Halloween or whatnot.
Right.
And I wasn't there that day, but they came in and asked my dad if he'd clean her jewelry off that was still, like, they couldn't get it.
They couldn't get it, right. Well, that takes all the fun out of that concept.
And he said it was, like, the most
disturbing
thing he'd ever smelled, because it was like the stench of
flesh. Because she was gone for a while.
Wow. Ugh.
Yeah, I was actually having a conversation about her today. That's weird. Huh.
Sorry to bring things down a little.
Yeah, it was such a captivating conversation where I was just like, okay, let's shut up and learn about diamonds for a second. And
I couldn't believe they came in on Halloween, though. That's just like, really? Cops.
Were they
Halloween?
Wearing like masks and stuff at least to make it kind of fun?
Cause, I don't know. Thankfully, I wasn't there.
Because I remember.
It's like the opposite of a robbery. Like, haha, we're the police and we're here to give you this jewelry and not take any, except we do want the jewelry back. When you're done.
But it reminds me of a posting that was on notalwaysright.com, which is just a site where people in retail and like hospitality situations rant about horrible encounters with customers. And one, it was not so much horrible, but just ridiculous, where this cop ran into a Halloween store panting, asking for a Batman costume. And he's like, okay, yeah, we have one, whatever. And so he gives it to him, and the cop, you know, gets it and runs out. And so one of the coworkers like follows them, and they find that there's this guy hanging on a fire escape in a Spider-Man costume who's refusing to deal with police. But then this police comes up with the Batman costume, and then he tries to coax the guy down, you know, since they're fellow superheroes. And the last thing that Spider-Man...
No, man, you're DC. Forget it.
Actually, no. What he was saying was, you could have been sent by... I think he said you could have been sent by the Joker to all these other cops and all this stuff, because I think this was right around when Dark Knight came out.
Oh, man.
And so the last thing that Spider-Man says as he's getting down off the fire escape is like, do you have any bat cocaine? My Spider-Man cocaine has worn off. Oh, God. Or is starting to wear off or something, or I used all of it.
Oh, my.
There was apparently a burglar in New York City that was going after, you know, accountants and people that they were tracking that were walking around with lots of cash on them.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy was dressed up as Spider-Man and would like run up and assault someone and take their shit and run off as Spider-Man, but like the police were searching the city for Spider-Man. And like accosting all, because there are people dressed up like Spider-Man all over New York.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, like probably in the Times Square area where people just kind of dress up and try to get attention from others. Like that freaky Cookie Monster, or is it Elmo? One of the two, like there's a really creepy looking Sesame Street Muppet that's wandering around Times Square that just looks really fucking creepy. I think it's Cookie Monster.
But they were interviewing these other Spider-Men, and they were saying, like, this guy's giving us a bad name. Spider-Men of New York City, we got to band together and find this guy.
We need to unionize.
Before he destroys our...
Our rep.
Destroys our trade.
Oh, that's horrible and wonderful Spider-dom. At the same time. And you know what? I'm just going to go, like...
Aw.
Just a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm,
that's
I'm
good.
Getting toasty.
That's a good idea.
Oh, there we go. It's a little cross breeze here.
I'm for it because we're getting past the point of being warm in our covers to
feverish and warm in our covers.
Yeah, no sitting return. Too close to the radiator or something. Yes. Yeah,
it'll balance out in a second. But things sounding decent, okay?
Yes.
Okay, so this would be a good time for everyone to beverage and whatnot, bathrooms and what have you, and we will get this episode rolling.
What episode is this?
This 108. Is
108.
108.
That beer finishes excellently.
That's the Sierra Nevada one?
That is the Newcastle Werewolf Blood.
Oh, yeah, ale. Newcastle.
It has a really weird smell. I mean,
this is kind of like the Minnesota Special Bitter.
That smells nice.
It's actually... Smell it now that it's done.
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah, it's really weird because...
I think just the amount of foam that was also in my little... glassy thing.
Yeah.
I think that maybe have put it off a little bit. But now there's just residue, it's a lot better.
Yeah, it definitely gets a lot sweeter.
As you go.
Mm-hmm. And you still don't have like the aftertaste, but it's very smooth, not too sweet, but